The following is a special presentation of Veterans Radio in honor of the 9th anniversary of 9/11.
If tomorrow all the things were gone I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the ones who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas and from sea to shining sea, Detroit down to Houston, from New York to L.A. Well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the ones who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the ones who died, who gave that right to me. And I'd gladly stand up next to you and defend her still, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
And that's a very thoughtful way to start the program, Bob Gould, that was your idea. I'm Gary Lilly, CB, July 1966. In the booth is Dale Thronberry, Attack Helicopters. Squadron.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dale. And this is a day that I hope America does a lot of reflecting. You were a slick pilot over in Vietnam, and you saw the worst of some things. And on that day, 9/11, we saw the same thing.
It was amazing, obviously, what occurred that day. But we're going to be talking about not only the people that perished during the 9/11 attacks, but those that survived.
That's right. And this is going to be a perspective, actually, I had thought of, but, you know, kind of skimmed the top of it. We're going to hear some stories today about the aftermath. Bob Gould is on the control room, and Bob, you're with the Big Red One and the 101st.
What yes, I thoughts? Love this country. God bless America. I love living here.
It's a great place to be. And Matt Durr, he's on the board, controlling the board today. Good morning, Matt. How old were you when 9/11 took place?
I was 18 years old. No, I was 17 years old. I was a senior in high school. And I remember sitting in my geography class when we found out it happened.
What was the reaction?
At first, no one believed what happened. We thought that we'd only known one plane had flown into the tower. And we thought that it was just an accident. And then when we realized that it was no accident, the mood in the entire school changed.
And I was driving to work when a friend of mine who was up in northern Michigan, actually watching the Detroit Red Wings training camp, phoned me on my mobile and told me a plane had just flown into the World Trade Center building, and I said, terrorists. And it was... One of the things that has always bothered me is people saying, who could have ever imagined this day? And I thought, if you were paying attention, who could not have imagined this day? And that angered me more than, quite frankly, than what the terrorists did, because terrorists are terrorists. They're going to do their thing. But for people to be caught unawares of this, that angered me. And I want it had to be a wake-up call for this country. And I just, it was for a while, but Americans have a short attention span, Dale.
Well, yeah, that was one of the things that we're probably going to address later on in the program is a little bit of the apathy that America has toward these types of events. Is, as you mentioned, we do have short-term memory. And what would happen if something similar happened again? I'm just curious to know what would be the reaction at that time.
You know what? I got a feeling it would be finger-pointing and the blame game.
Probably, unfortunately, people on opposite sides of the street just pointing fingers and saying, it's your fault. No, it's your fault.
Right.
We should have been ready. And we were talking about this earlier. Consider all of the potential plans that didn't work out.
Over the years since 9/11, the general public doesn't realize it because our media only makes a big thing of it when they do work out. And there have been a number of attempts that have been thwarted in that period of time.
Well, it is unfortunate that media and people in general don't pay attention to people when they're doing their job correctly. It's only when they're not doing their job that we notice.
I was listening to, we're going to talk a little bit about Pat Tillman later on today because the first guest has a story about him. And there's a documentary I was listening to, NPR Radio. And this guy created a documentary about the cover-up. And in about a minute and a half, I listened to him, and I was astounded at how little this guy knows, and yet he's done a documentary to attack the military. The Silver Star is rewarded only to those who have died in battle. That was one of his statements.
In fact, we probably will be doing a whole program on awards and the lack thereof during the last 9 years.
And they knew that he was killed by friendly fire because there were green tracer burns on his uniform. And we know those are Americans. Well, Americans have red. Bad guys have green. And I don't know, if that does leave a green mark. Perhaps it does. But there was other statements. I only listened to it for about a minute and a half, and I thought, you don't know what you're talking about, and yet you're going to put out a documentary on this event.
Well, as I always tell my students in my media class, you got to know who's producing it, because everybody has an objective.
That's exactly
whether
an agenda.
Whether it's conscious or unconscious, it's always going to come through.
It will.
And so you always have to know who made the documentary and, most of all, who's funding it.
Very good point. Very good point. And you have to take the information and just tuck it away. Don't reject it. Don't accept it.
Right.
Tuck it away and compare it about something else you're going to hear or see. Well, today we're going to be talking about the aftermath of 9/11. Some people pulled our country together, but and that was great. That was a great feeling to be an American, as the song that Bob played earlier. But we tend to forget these things, and we need to remember them. And so that's why today's program is dedicated to the memories of 9/11. Are we welcoming any troops home today, Bob? No, we're not. Okay, then, in that case, we just want to say welcome home to all the troops that have been over there, that have come back, and we hope eventually you get to come back and stay back. And in the meantime, you're doing what has to be done and what your country has asked of you. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Lay me down in the cold, cold ground, where the four money men have gone. Lay me down in the cold, cold ground, where the four money men have gone.
We're back on the air, Veterans Radio, coming to you from WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, our flagship station over the Ave Maria and other networks across the country and also on the Internet around the world. And if you're simply listening, you might want to get onto the our website, veteransradio.net, and take advantage of the photographs that we show on the air. Today's are a good reminder. I think we need to remember what happened, and that this country is a beacon of freedom, and there are people that can't stand that. They don't want us to be free. They don't want the world to be free. So our first guest today is a fellow that served in my battalion in Vietnam the year after I left. And my tour was pretty calm, but Dave Walker was with MCB3 in 1967, did a couple of tours after that. And I think you were greeted the very first day by the NVA when you arrived in country. Is that right, David Walker? Ah, push the button. We need a big flashing sign for Gary. Push the button. David Walker, MCB3.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You're up awfully early. You're out on the West Coast.
And it's still dark out here.
Oh, dark 30, right?
Yes, sir.
You guys were greeted the very first day that you arrived in country, were you?
Actually, I was on an advanced unit, and we went and set up camp just outside of Fubai. And it was a few weeks later, we actually got hit with artillery from 3rd Marine Division. And
Friendly fire
situation, yes.
Well, that's kind of a segue into then what we were going to talk about first. You had an experience that was connected with Pat Tillman, who was killed by friendly fire. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, because I work as a chaplain for a police department out here now, Campbell Police, I oftentimes get asked to do charity events and different things. And anyway, one of the DJs out here, Sam Van Sant, he with KBA Radio, had done some spots for us at no charge for some vets we're raising money for that had been injured in the war. And then he was involved in a charity, and I thought, well, I'd return favors, so I decided to help with this. It was a Pat Tillman 10K run. And so I showed up, and again, dark in the morning, all the runners, I said, it helped sign them in. And I was sitting there next to a lady that was Pat's next-door neighbor. She was lived next door to the Tillmans, still does to this day, as far as I know. And she told me the story that she was there the day that the family got the notification Pat had been killed. And that was pretty devastating. She says, the only thing worse than that was when the next time they were notified that it was friendly fire and that there had been a cover-up. And she said that was a lot more emotionally draining. Later that morning, the Tillmans happened to be walking by, and they stopped and came over and gave her a hug and talked. So I knew it was a for-real story. That's where she lived. That's what had gone on. Pretty devastating thing to find out, kind of like a betrayal after a tragedy.
She was there also the day that they found out that it was friendly fire, correct?
Yes, she was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You are a chaplain with the police department.
Yes.
You were called as part of an organization to go to New York to Ground Zero, and
right.
As with chaplain duties, you were there 10 days. Tell us about that. How did you get called up briefly, and what happened when you arrived? What did you see when you arrived?
I I'd been part of a national team. I was called up out of Destin, Florida, from an organization there called ICPC, International Conference of Police Chaplains. And the day I arrived, it kind of set the tone for everything. There were two officers from Bristol PD that had come to escort us from the airport over to Port Authority. And we were just casual chit-chat, and we could see the smoke from Ground Zero. And I commented, because I'd been in construction, I'd grown up, you know, working job sites, and I thought, my gosh, all the toxins and junk must be in there. I says, and I made mention of, you know, possible connections to cancer and what have you. The female officer next to me started crying, and I thought, Jesus, said something I shouldn't have said. As it turned out, I found out later that she was terminal with cancer, and that she would rather than stay home, she wanted to be part of something to help this country. So that kind of set the tone. We went straight down to Ground Zero. The destruction there was absolutely incredible. If you can imagine, you know, the site where the buildings were, it wasn't just a couple city blocks. It was over 16 acres, more than 22 acres. And from the place where we walked in to check in at Port Authority to where I walked over to my station near Station 10 on Liberty Street was about a half a mile walk. So it was a huge area. And it really, it took me a while to absorb it, probably about third day before I stopped and actually looked and realized how big a area of destruction was, but just total absolute destruction. Buildings turned into dust, metal and steel, huge beams, you know, just twisted like they were pretzels. It was unbelievable.
What were your duties then at your station?
Basically what we do is we had five-man teams. We had one guy that was kind of like a crew leader, and then that we worked in pairs. And most of the time we worked with Don Higgins. Don was another chaplain from Tracy Police Department out here in California. And we would listen for ANPAC. They had the area gridded out, and they'd tell us we found bodies or body parts, and we need you in there. We would go in, you know, help with getting the body parts bagged up, or the bodies, which we didn't often find whole bodies. Although the first day, we found nine firefighters in a stairwell covered by some beams. But anyway, we would do help with the bagging in the Stokes carrier, put an American flag on them, say a brief little prayer below ground, come up to the surface, very brief memorial service. I'm talking 2 minutes at the most because the whole site would shut down. And then we'd escort them over to the temporary morgue where they would log in, whoever, whatever we had found. And then we'd return back to the site and do the same thing all over again. Shifts were about 12 hours, supposed to be 12-hour shifts, but they often ran longer than that.
Did you do any counseling while you were there?
One morning they sent me over, and I think it's Pier 82, and my memory's a little fuzzy on some of this stuff, but anyway, to help at the family center over there. But truthfully, they had seven different agencies there. They had NYPD, Social Security, Red Cross. I mean, just went on and on, and there was really no need for me there. I did witness firsthand one of the ladies I talked to trying to perpetuate fraud, saying that her husband was in the towers when they went down. She's talking to him on the phone. She didn't know a Social Security number, didn't know what company he worked for, obviously. I was looking through her photo album, no pictures of him, only pictures of her and her son. One of the sergeants from NYPD, I won't use the language because we're
Christian,
you know, Ave Maria here, but anyway, in no uncertain terms, let her know she better get herself out of there or she'd be arrested. And he was really upset because this had gone on over and over again. People wanted to cash in on the what they thought would be a cash cow later.
The tragedies bring out the best in people, but also it brings out a very few, percentage-wise, the worst in people. The people that are that will try to take advantage of anything. So you talked about the toxic dust earlier. You've now had things that have happened to you and to your team. And what do you know about the aftermath for you people that worked on the site?
Well, I understand you have Mark Byrne on the show later on.
He's coming on after the bottom of the hour, yes.
Okay,
Mark Byrne is the attorney who's representing a number of plaintiffs. I'll ask him how many.
Right. He's probably more up to date. The latest that I have is over 800 of the workers have died from cancer. You know, that were on the site. 270 of those were from cancer, and that's it. That those statistics are a year old. So I'm sure Mark can bring you much more up to speed on that.
What about your own team?
My team, Roland Candle, he was our supervisor. He died the day after. He died on January 8th, the day after they shut down the site. And had another guy, Harry Presley, that was there about the same time, and Harry's throat closed down. They had to put him on a tracheotomy. I've had cancer. I've had lung problems. Even today, I'm on four medications for lung issues. And the debris inhaled wasn't just your lungs. It got your throat, your sinuses, stomach. Take medication for stomach. I've had heart trouble. I'm a guy that the day before, well, before I left, you know, I was on no medications for anything. As a bodybuilder, I'd been semifinals for at the national level for a bodybuilding contest. And within 6 months of you know, coming back from ground zero, my lungs were in such bad shape I could hardly walk down the street. I was that taken by the you know, what it had done to my lungs and throat and everything else. So pretty devastating personally. It ended my career as far as my active working career.
And you had to fight to get workman's comp. You were sent out there?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, very bizarre. They denied, well, because I was working under the direction of Port Authority, the city wanted to distance themselves from any workers' comp.
Your city?
The city I came from, and they'd sent me. It wasn't like I went on my own. They actually sent me as an emissary from the city. They had a city council meeting and resolution. I mean, it was a big thing. And you know, and then after I came back and they realized how sick I was, they said I was not their employee. That started about a four-year court battle, which we, you know, we won, and I'm now covered under workers' comp for my medications. The interesting twist to it is that there's been a multi-million-dollar, I think it's around $762 million settlement. The city found out about it, and now they want to claim them. In fact, they have laid claim to the money that I would have gotten. And so I don't know what happened with that. Mark Byrne is actually negotiating with them right now to see if they'll release their lien on the claim for the money. So, interesting twist. Don't know who you are. Oh, he's our cousin.
Okay, let's get back to Ground Zero and the work you did.
Yes.
Then you had to have some other very memorable, poignant pictures in your mind and scenes.
Absolutely.
That you saw. Give us a couple of them.
One of the things that touched me actually from the day it happened, I kind of a selfish thought, but when, you know, I got the call from my mom in the morning, who had been called by my cousin back in Georgia, and she was screaming on the phone that we're under attack. Mom gets kind of excited about things. So anyway, I told her to settle down. And then when I turned on the TV, I realized what was happening in New York. But I thought, well, it's New York, and at least it's not here. Later, what I found out was that one of the gals that we used to work out with together, Nicole Miller, she was at the gym that I used to work out at. She was on flight 93 when it went down, so that kind of touched home. My niece, Tammy, her husband's sister-in-law, was on the 104th floor when it went down, and she was killed. They later found a femur from her, and that was all. You know, it just, you know, bit by bit, it kind of came home. Another niece I have, her cousin has a contract, the elevators in the trade towers, and they thought he was in there and found out later he was across the street having donuts. So it came home, and as you know, as a nation, it affected our entire nation, you know, the economy and everything else.
Yes, it did. I had a client, a farmer I was working with, told me that he was going to be gone for a few days, that he and the wife were going out to visit their daughter and son-in-law who lived in New York. They spent the morning early having breakfast and dropped the son-in-law off at work, and as they were driving away, the daughter said, oh, I forgot to ask or tell him, and she called up from her cell phone. They were talking, and all of a sudden he said, there's an airplane heading right at me. And he said later that he could look into the pilot's face and his eyes even, and at the last moment, a gust of wind, an updraft, whatever, lifted him about the airplane about three floors above him. But right up to that point, the nose was pointed right at him personally.
Wow.
And they, you know, you hear these stories, and there's just so many of them out there.
They're crazy. And one story that comes to mind, one of the guys I met at the family center there was a superintendent on the one of the office buildings right there on Liberty Street. The face of that building got sheared off. And he'd gone over the window to watch the flames and stuff, and the building's coming down, and then he walked away from it, and then the front of the building collapsed off in front of him. Some of the other thoughts I had, too, you know, he asked about thoughts. There was an Irish man. He'd flown his entire family. I met him over at St. Paul's Church. I used to go there and take a break. And he'd flown his family over to see the Americans and said, I want you to see what these people are made of. They're great people. And I was really touched that he would do that. You talked about apathy. The first anniversary of 9/11, I had to turn down a lot of speaking engagements. The following year, I called people up to see if they're going to be rebooking me for their celebrations, and they said, no, we're going to move on. We're moving on. We're forgetting about this, putting it behind us. So it was like a self-constructed apathy.
Right. Did I hear you right that the Irishman was from, obviously from Ireland, but there at the time, and flew his family over to America to see what the American people are made of?
Yeah, he flew them all over. They were standing on the perimeter. You know, the public was not allowed into the area where we were working, so they had police barricades there. And I had to come, in order to get to St. Paul's, I had to walk out onto that public sidewalk for about 50 feet. And, you know, people would be taking your pictures. And in fact, one guy, there were so many flashes going off, he stopped. He goes, Dave, can you help me? Because he couldn't see. He was literally blinded by the flash bulbs or all these different things. But he was standing there, and they were trying to peek between the buildings so they could see the workers and watch the workers come in and out. But he actually took his entire family over. Yeah.
What is your one most memorable thought of those 10 days that you were there?
I would say the last day that I was there was October 26th. Don Higgins and I were walking down West Highway. I looked up to our left. It was very surreal. There was floodlights like at a football game they were on. There was smoke rising from the ground from the fire still going on and the water being sprayed down on them. There were six looked like crosses up there. They're just stanchions, but they would cut them. And they looked like crosses up on this mound, and there was a opening underneath there. And I commented to Don, it kind of reminded me of Christ and the three crosses and the tomb that he was buried in and what have you. And we went on. We later, that day, we pulled six firefighters out of there, and I did the memorial service for the last one that we pulled out. When I looked up to Don, and I says, Don, do you realize we just pulled six guys out from underneath the six crosses? And the six crosses were gone as we looked back there. These firefighters would not set this guy down on the ground, which we always did, and it was out of respect for him. And it turned out a few weeks before he had saved a number of other firefighters when a facade of a building collapsed on him. I made a promise to those guys that whenever asked, I would tell the story of, I'm sorry, the love.
Take your time.
The honor that
take your time.
Had one another. And they really did care. It was really a brotherhood. And I think it all kind of came to a head at that point where they truly loved and cared for one another and would work till they literally dropped trying to get, you know, whoever was surviving, which we didn't find anybody at the time I was there, and bring those that had died back out of the rubble.
Dave Walker, you worked 10 days at Ground Zero immediately after 9/11. It's awfully early where you are, and I know your lungs are in pretty bad shape. Thank you for being on. Thank you for agreeing to come on and tell your story.
I'm glad to do it.
God bless you. Hope
to
see you at one of the reunions one day.
And I'm going to miss the one next week.
Unfortunately, I have to. But Dave is a Reverend who always opens our reunions with her prayers, and then a funny story. You're listening to Veterans Radio, the aftermath of 9/11. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Sergeant David Bleek, although a medical aid man, killed 3 North Korean soldiers and disarmed 2 more. Details after this. Bleek volunteered to accompany a reconnaissance patrol committed to engage the enemy and capture a prisoner for interrogation. Forging up the rugged slope of the key terrain, the group was subjected to intense automatic weapons and small arms fire and suffered several casualties. After administering to the wounded, Bleek continued to advance with the patrol. Nearing the crest of the hill while attempting to cross the fire-swept area to attend the wounded, he came under hostile fire from a small group of the enemy concealed in a trench. Entering the trench, he closed with the enemy, killed 2 with his bare hands, and a 3rd with his trench knife. Moving from the emplacement, Bleek saw a concussion grenade fall in front of a companion and, quickly shifting his position, shielded the man from the impact of the blast. Later, while ministering to the wounded, a hostile bullet struck him, but, despite the wound, Bleek undertook to evacuate the wounded comrade. As he moved down the hill with his heavy burden, 2 enemy soldiers with fixed bayonets attacked him. Closing with the aggressors, he grabbed them and smacked their heads together, then carried his helpless comrade down the hill to safety. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
It was Friday morning, the rain was falling down. Another true life hero was headed for hallowed ground, wrapped up in old glory as the Cardinal moved along. The old guard marched in cadence, an honored soldier's song. I can still recall what my grandfather said to me, son, when you grow to be.
Veterans Radio, we're talking about the aftermath of 9/11. In one moment, we're going to be talking to an attorney, Mark Byrne, who represents a lot of people, plaintiffs against the... he'll tell us who the plaintiffs are and who the defendants are and what the lawsuit's all about. In the meantime, we were just talking about people who are take advantage of things. And Matt, I don't know if you can remove that political message that somebody sent in by email. Where are all the Republican cheerleaders when it comes to the issue of compensation? That's exactly what we were talking about earlier, that somebody's going to be finger-pointing and passing blame and making political statements over other people dying. That's not acceptable. The Mark Byrne, you're an attorney from New York. You represent a number of people. Thank you for getting up where you are right now and being on Veterans Radio. Tell us about the lawsuit that that you're involved with.
Okay, it's a privilege to be on Veterans Radio this morning, and I appreciate this opportunity. My firm in New York, Warby, Groner, Edelman, Napoli, Byrne, we represent nearly 10,000 men and women, the heroes of 9/11, who after the towers fell were there for up to a year or so, cleaning up the debris and the toxic materials as a result of the attacks on the World Trade Center.
But who are the defendants? I understand there's an arm's-length list of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, the primary defendants are the City of New York and the contractors who brought the men and women down to the site, and then many subcontractors and others who were involved in having men and women come down and clean up without giving them the proper safety equipment to work in such a dangerous place.
And your lawsuits would probably say that they should have known about this, but they didn't protect their workers?
Correct. The proper respiratory equipment was not given. They sent these men and women in the face of clear danger, clear toxic materials, a toxic soup that had basically never been known on this planet before. To give you an example, when the plane struck the Pentagon, no one was allowed to go in and clean up there until they had the proper equipment, hazmat suits, the proper respiratory. And as a result, there are no claims of injury at the Pentagon, whereas there are tens of thousands of people who claim injuries at the World Trade Center site.
And you and your firm represent 10,000 of them?
Yes, we represent nearly 99% of the men and women. Many of these brave men and women were firefighters. We represent over 1,000 firefighters, over 3,500 police officers, and then, of course, there were volunteers, there were iron workers, there were sanitation workers, there were all kinds of construction workers who came down, bravely gave of themselves, never once thinking about whether or not they would be safe, but just to go in there and help New York City and our country.
And is there a dollar figure on the lawsuits?
Well, we have arrived, just recently we arrived at a settlement of $712,500,000. At this time, the men and women who were plaintiffs at the time of the settlement are now sending in their releases, and we would hope to have distribution of the first monies to these individuals before the end of the year.
How is it decided who gets how much? Is it evenly divided, or is it...
No. There's a very complicated grid, so to speak, based on injuries, based on how long you were down at the site, whether or not you had pre-existing problems of the nature that you're complaining about now. Oh, it's very, very complicated. The basic compensation is $3,250 plus a $100,000 life insurance policy if you get any type of cancer delineated in the policy, up to nearly $2 million.
Who is paying the money?
There was a grant from FEMA in 2003 for $1 billion that was given to the city of New York to insure the contractors and the city of New York, and the $712,500,000 was paid by the captive insurance company, it's called.
The who negotiated the settlements? Would have to be somebody very familiar with actuarials, or?
Well, first of all, my firm, as I said, we had 98% of the cases. There was another firm that had a couple of hundred cases. And in fact, just to indicate the difference in law firms, our law firm sued not only the city and the contractors, but the Port Authority and other defendants who are not part of this settlement, but who we are negotiating with at this time. So the $712 million that our clients will share in is not the only money that those men and women will be getting. Eventually, there will be additional settlements and additional distributions made beyond that $712,000, only for our clients, not for the clients of another law firm who were involved in the suit as well. My partner, Paul Napoli, was the lead lawyer from day one through the 7 years of the litigation. And Paul was the one basically in charge, together with our other partner, Bill Groner, of negotiating this settlement. There were doctors, there were epidemiologists, there were statisticians, there were biostatisticians.
Okay.
There were all kinds of experts employed in order to arrive at this settlement. In fact, our firm, representing 98% of the workers, put up nearly $35 million in preparing this case right through the settlement.
It's not cheap to go to court, and if you get
10,000
people,
especially when you're representing 10,000 people.
Right, right. What about the military? Do you represent any military people? You can't sue the government if you're in the military. That's one of the things that there was an Ann Arbor boy that, or a Michigan boy that died on a aircraft carrier, and he was forced to do a lot of exercise and heat and collapsed and died. My law attorneys that represent me were handling a lawsuit, and I kept my mouth shut. I said, well, geez, you can't, somebody in the military can't sue the military. And I assumed they knew that, and that's what it came down to. They were devastated when they found that out after about 3 years. So is anybody in the military included in this for whatever reason?
No, they're not, and your explanation is a good one. And what happened, in fact, what happened was there was another law firm that did, in fact, bring a lawsuit on behalf of some military personnel who were at the World Trade Center site, and that case was, in fact, dismissed, largely for the reasons that you have just enumerated.
Right.
It's unfortunate. The only way that there might be a lawsuit with a military personnel is if they could find a third party who is not a government employee and who was acting in their capacity outside of the military, but was in fact working with military,
Mark,
and they might be able to be sued.
Well, for those that have been in the military, it's really a good idea that you can't sue the military. We wouldn't be safe if that were the case. So thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, Mark, and good luck for all the people that you're representing.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and keep doing all the good that you do for this country.
Thank you so much. Dale, before we end the segment, we'd like to hear from military people how your life has been affected since 9/11. Dale, what are your thoughts on that, suing the military, and how it's affected people who went out and joined the military after 9/11? Do you have any experience with that? You teach.
Not really, any more than anybody else has. I think that the idea of being in a litigious, is that the word, society, is that we always seem to want to get something for nothing. And the problem comes down to is these people that were at the World Trade Center, went down there voluntarily, the vast majority of them, to help out. But then they find out that they've been exposed to all these toxins, much
right.
like Agent Orange or some of the other things.
Oh, boy.
They should be, they are entitled to be taken care of. It's just unfortunate that they have to go through this entire legal process to get taken care of.
Right.
And we talked to a number of people, and we'll probably talk more about it after the break.
And after the break, we would like you former or current military people to phone in 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. Tell us how 9/11 changed your life. I know it changed mine. PTSD came back. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
Veterans, need help with your VA benefit claim? Then call Legal Help for Veterans right now at 800-693-4800. To ensure the best possible chance for success, our attorneys at Legal Help for Veterans are devoted to VA claim appeals, and they will forcefully present your particular case. So make that call today to Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800 for your no-charge consultation.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
On Veterans Radio, I want to give that call-in number again. It's 877-573-7825. If you're a veteran or active duty in the military, we'd like to know how 9/11 affected you. I put that question out on Facebook last night, and somebody named Stephen phoned in or responded. He said, "I lost my job because of that day. I went to war for 2 years because of that day. It has cost me more than most, especially since I returned. Remember all those who died on 9/11 and have subsequently died fighting radical Islam. Thanks for what you do. You're a true patriot." That's aimed at all of us. Again, 877-573-7825. After 9/11, I didn't realize it, but I went into a flat tailspin that got steeper and steeper and steeper, thinking about all the things that went on during the Vietnam War. And I know that had to happen to a lot of people. How about you?
I think the issue is that, yes, it did a great deal. Surprisingly, it affected many, many more Vietnam veterans than was thought. It was, it's kind of like PTSD by proxy.
Correct.
Because, and we're going to be talking about this next week. I'll get the promo in now. We're going to be talking about PTSD and some of the treatments and some of the more esoteric treatments that are being used out there for PTSD. But what occurred was, after the 9/11 catastrophes and over 3,000 people being killed, it just kind of, I think it put so many people into shock, and it also opened up memories in the backs of our heads that we hadn't thought about for 30 years, and suddenly it just all came flooding in, and a lot of times many of us were not able to cope with that. And so we finally sought the help that we needed,
yep.
And we didn't realize that we had needed it for that time period. But it does open wounds, because we can't understand that somebody would actually do something like that. I mean, to plan it, pre-plan it ahead,
well,
and to go forward with it.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, one of the things that angered me the most was that people were constantly saying, "Who could have imagined? Who could have imagined?" It was 20 months or 22 months earlier, I was flying into New York City on a Thanksgiving. I looked down at the Twin Towers and I thought how easily a terrorist could hijack this plane right here and fly it into one of those buildings.
Well,
I was aware that there are terrorists out there and they want to do harm to us, and that there's a lot of different ways they could do it. And one of them was hijack a plane and fly it into the World Trade Center tower. I missed it by one. They got both of them.
I think that many of us felt that would be the case And it's not that we're all paranoid, and you know, sometimes paranoia is not bad. There may actually be somebody following
it's,
you.
And, it's realistic,
but
realism.
But you would think that they would have all those contingencies in place. And just going back to our experiences in the military, almost all of us, we always had to have a not only a plan A, but a B, C, D, E, F, you know, because you know that in the chaos of the real world, nothing's going to go according to plan, and that we...
Murphy's Law of Combat, no plan survives first contact with the enemy.
You just can't quite understand it. I guess we're just so complacent with figuring out we had these two giant oceans that protect us from the rest of the world. Well, in today's world, it doesn't necessarily protect you anymore.
And I
think we have to get this point in, that we have to congratulate all of the security agencies that are working in America today from preventing, you know, another catastrophic event like that.
Unfortunately, our media will only report hugely on when things go wrong, but they kind of mention when things go right. There have been a lot of plots broken up and thwarted in the days since 9/11. There have been a lot of them, and they're breaking them up. I don't know how they do it. They're good. How do they find out who's a terrorist? But there's 310 million people in this country.
No, not all of them are as sane as you or me. In that case, well, I don't know. I mean, and we look at, you know, we've talked to young men and women who have joined the military since 9/11, and many of them were motivated by that event, and that it was something that they could do to help.
It was the Pearl Harbor of our
of their generation.
Yeah, right. And you know what? In World War II, after Pearl Harbor, people lined up to enlist, and the same as today, it then dwindled off. Everybody thinks that went on for the entire war. Didn't 75% that served were draftees in World War II.
The further you get away from an event, the less impact it has on you.
Right.
And time, unfortunately, as they say, heals all wounds, but it also shortens our memory. And, you know, I know that we've had guests on this program that have talked about potential conspiracies that are out there that may come to fruition or may not, and some of them are non-fictional and some are fictional. But you always have to be on guard. I don't care where it is, especially in a country like ours, where we do let pretty much anybody who wants to come here to live come on down. And we have to be aware that there are people out there that don't necessarily believe in what our country stands for. And that's something that's difficult to understand for all of us.
I think one thing that our politicians need to do is recognize the world that we're in today. After Vietnam, the Church Committee hearings, the CIA's scandals, that you know, there were scandals, but there weren't also that they were accused of. The FBI cannot communicate with the CIA and vice versa inside this country. And there was a CIA agent who had strong knowledge that this was going to happen, but I saw him speaking in a documentary, and he said, had I picked up the phone and called the FBI to tell them what I knew, then I would have been breaking federal law. We got to get away from that. Bob Gould, you've got something to say?
Yes, I do have something to say. I think we were talking about that this morning, where the TSA people were so alert over there in Afghanistan, the security, or not Afghanistan, Amsterdam, there we go. Well, right, got to get that right. When they found the Pepto-Bismol bottle taped to how many cell phones? Two or three cell phones? And I was shocked when I heard about how we need to be apologizing because this was so innocuous. Excuse me, folks. Yeah. Is there a person that's listening out there, all of the thousands, that believe that? Raise your hand. Yeah, just as I thought. I didn't see any hands raised. So, you know, I wanted to make that comment on that. God bless them, and they were alert.
Yep.
Yes, you're darn right. And they're still trying to get past us, putting bombs, explosives, chemicals in their underwear, in their shoes, in their ears, wherever.
And there's a lot of dry runs going on all the time where you've got people that will go into a restroom. They line up so nobody gets in there in between them. And each one of them will have a container with a little liquid in it. And it's a dry run to see if they can make a bomb inside the restroom of an airplane. So, folks, start getting real about this threat. Start getting real and quit being PC. You know, quit trying to defend the criminals. And you're going to kill us all if you do that. Tell us about next week. Dale, who are you?
Well, as I said, we are going to be talking with... one is going to be Reg Williams, who is a psychologist, psychiatrist, who has worked with Iraq and Afghanistan veterans and has come up with some really great programs to work with those veterans to help them with their issues. We're also working on lining up. They're doing a new program down at Fort Bliss in Texas. We're hoping to have representatives on from Fort Bliss to talk about their PTSD treatment programs. And finally, we're going to have a representative from the Ann Arbor Veterans Affairs here in locally to talk about what the treatments are and what is available. So I encourage you to tune in next week to find out.
Well, there's a lot of different programs going on, some bizarre, some, and one of them that makes a lot of sense is focus on the positive, kind of like aromatherapy, and eventually the positive will take over. The other one is ecstasy. Crazy.
Veterans, need help with your VA benefit claim? Then call Legal Help for Veterans right now at 800-693-4800. To ensure the best possible chance for success, our attorneys at Legal Help for Veterans are devoted to VA claim appeals, and they will forcefully present your particular case. So make that call today to Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800 for your no-charge consultation.